From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, Biden's upside-down economy, 12 Republican senators turn their backs on marriage, and what are the next steps for biblical marriage? Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. Earlier this week, the Senate voted, with the help of 12 Republicans, to codify into federal law same-sex marriage. And while the Senate action is over, it moves to the House for a vote early in the upcoming week. So please take the time to contact your House member and let them know how you feel. Tony Perkins will be letting you know how to reach the congressional switchboard a little later. But first, earlier this week, President Biden had this to say about the economy.
I continue to call on the producers to invest their record profits in America for Americans. In America, we can do two things at the same time. We can increase production and lower prices for American consumers and businesses in the short term while accelerating our investment in transition to a clean energy future. And we're going to do that. We're doing it.
With more on the economy, let's join Tony Perkins and economist Stephen Moore from Tuesday's edition of Washington Watch Live.
President Biden gave a speech in Michigan today at the facility of a semiconductor chip manufacturer. The president claims his economic plan is leading to a manufacturing boom in America, and it is actually growing our economy. Is that true? Joining me now to discuss this and more is economist Stephen Moore. He is a senior fellow at the Freedom Works and co-founder of the Committee to Unleash Prosperity. Stephen, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Tony.
So is the president's economic plan working?
Well, we did have a manufacturing renaissance in America in 2017 and 2018 and 2019 until COVID hit. And that was under Donald Trump with his reduction in regulations on American businesses. And we did the big reduction in the business tax rates, which brought a lot of capital and jobs back to the United States. Remember, Tony, under Trump, the first time in 50 years, we actually had companies moving from Mexico to Michigan rather than the other way around. Now, we have had a recapturing of manufacturing jobs under Biden, but that's simply the jobs that were lost because of the lockdowns during COVID. We're way below where we should be. And let's not forget, Tony, that you were talking about the energy situation. Those are effectively, you know, blue-collar manufacturing jobs in the oil patch. And we have a president who has basically declared war on American energy. I love that clip that you played from the White House saying, oh, we have 9,000 permits that aren't being taken. The reason that nobody's drilling on those permits is because the Biden administration has basically threatened to kill all of the development. They've created so many environmental regulations against drilling that no one in their right mind would take Biden up on that deal. I call it you were talking about disrespect. This is the Disrespect for American Jobs Act.
You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but the administration leaning on the financial industry not to make capital available to those in the energy business.
Good point, Tony. You're exactly right. This is this ESG trend, which is diverting capital away from our oil and gas and coal industry. And I want to make sure that your viewers understand, I think most of them do, but I don't think people in Washington, D.C. understand this, that about 70% of our energy that we use, that the computer that I'm on right now, the telephones we use, the food that we eat, the transportation, it's all derived of energy. And 70% of that, Tony, in America comes from old-fashioned fossil fuels. Those are what really created the industrialization of America. This war on American fossil fuels, I think, is extraordinarily dangerous. And I agree with what you were saying earlier, that it's almost unpatriotic what the president is doing and saying, yes, you can drill in Venezuela, which is headed by a criminal dictator who's a socialist, but you can't drill in Texas and Oklahoma and Alaska. Does that make any sense? Not to me.
No. Can you explain that to me? Why are we going and propping up a socialist dictator when we can be creating jobs? As you talked about, blue-collar, good-paying jobs. I worked in the oil field when I was in high school in Oklahoma, where I grew up. This is good for America in so many different ways. Why would we go to Venezuela?
I wish I had a good answer for that, Tony, because it just defies explanation. Now, the Biden administration is saying that this evil regime under Maduro is going to somehow behave itself and it's going to improve its human rights record as a part of this bargain. Do you believe that, Tony? I mean, this is an evil regime.
I don't believe it at all, because I didn't believe it, 25 years ago when they said that about China, because we've seen how that played out.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, the problem with liberals is that they believe what they want to believe, not believe reality, you know. And so the reality is you see that these countries always violate these promises. Venezuela has some of the worst human rights violations in the world. I mean, Tony, they are starving to death their own people. My God, that's the greatest human rights violation on the planet right now. So the idea that Maduro this tiger is going to change his stripes. I don't see it happening. And I think this is basically almost a penance that we have to pay for being a rich country. Remember, just a week and a half ago, Biden went to the Middle East and told these other countries, the United States is going to pay reparations. That's the word he turned. We have to pay the reparations to the rest of the world for our using fossil fuels. Wait a minute. We provided $500 billion, Tony, of foreign aid to the rest of the world, and we owe them money? I mean, it's absurd.
Yeah, it clearly is. It makes no sense. I want to go to another topic that I think could have the president in a bind. He's calling on Congress to block a strike by more than 100,000 union members at the nation's freight railroads, which is set to take place, I think, on the 9th of December if an agreement is not reached. I mean, the president himself, he's the union president. But now he knows what this will do to the economy, about $2 billion blow per day if there is a rail strike.
And you may recall, Tony, that about 3 weeks before the election, he had a big press conference, remember, in front of the White House, I think it was in the Rose Garden, saying, oh, we've reached a deal and this whole problem has been resolved. Well, there was no real deal. It was just to kick the can past the election day. Isn't that suspicious that about a week after the election, all of a sudden this issue reemerged? I don't think they're really close to a deal. I think it's irresponsible. I mean, look, nobody wants a strike. It would cause havoc for our economy. But on the other hand, you know, why should Congress intervene? I thought the president and Tony and Pete Buttigieg, the transportation secretary, had solved this problem. And here we are 6 months later during Christmas season, when so much packages are sent out and there's so much commerce flowing. Rail strike would be disaster. But, you know, Marco Rubio put out a good statement today saying, wait a minute, this isn't something Congress should intervene in. This is something that should be the management of the railroads and the workers, and the president should try to broker this deal, but not Congress.
It looks like that's not going to happen. But of course, this will happen in a lame duck session of Congress. And so the Democrats, they have control of the House. You know, they don't completely have control of the Senate. But do you think this is something that makes its way through with Republican support?
Hard to say. There's going to be, you know, the president basically has put the onus on Congress here. As I mentioned, Marco Rubio said, well, wait a minute, this deal might not be fair to the workers. I mean, and remember, Tony, the reason we're seeing this kind of labor strife right now and a growing number of strikes is because workers are facing a lot of financial stress because of Biden inflation. Remember, we only had 1.5% inflation under Trump. Now we got 8.5% inflation. That's killing workers' wages.
Right. All of this shows us just how fragile our supply chain and our economy is. It does not work unless the American people have confidence in it. And all of these pieces, you know, it's the invisible hand that Adam Smith talked about, where all of these pieces just work together because people are pursuing, you know, in part their own interest. But when government gets involved, it just kind of throws everything off kilter.
Yeah, and I'll just, you know, add one other point that, you know, we did a study at the Committee to Unleash Prosperity a month or two ago. Where we showed that none of the people in the Biden administration, very few, most of them do not have any business experience. So they don't know how to deal with a crisis like this. They're just a bunch of left-wing ideologues. They're college professors. They're community activists. They're lawyers. They don't know anything about how to deal with a crisis like this. And it's a dangerous situation for our country right now that we have such poor leadership in Washington.
Yeah, it would be better if they would just all go home and let the economy run itself. Stephen Moore, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Stephen Moore. You know, it really is. I think the economy, so much stuff would work better without the government intervention. And, of course, top of my list is education. They're destroying our children. Of course, that's a topic for another day. All right, when we come back, Congressman Jody Heiss of Georgia joins us as the Senate moves forward to advance the so-called Respect for Marriage Act. I think it's more of a Disrespect for Marriage Act. He's going to join us with action steps. You're not finished yet. We've still got work to do. So don't go away. Jody Heiss joins us next. You're on Washington Watch.
When persecution comes, will you be prepared to stand? Throughout Scripture, believers are told that they should expect to be persecuted. In John, Jesus warns his disciples that if they persecuted me, they will persecute you also. With that knowledge, Christians shouldn't live in fear, but they ought to prepare their hearts to stand faithfully in the face of trials. Most Christians in the U.S. feel far removed from the threat of persecution, but Pastor Andrew Brunson knows persecution well. In October 2016, Brunson was held for 2 years in Turkish prisons after being falsely accused of terrorism. After a worldwide prayer movement and significant political pressure from the U.S. government, he was released in October 2018. And since then, Andrew has taken up the call to urge Christians in the West to prepare for hostility. Brunson led an 8-part video series titled Prepare to Stand to help fellow believers. Watch this important series by going to frc.org/prepare to stand.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Let me go ahead and give you the Capitol switchboard number because you're going to need it if you're going to weigh in on this so-called Respect for Marriage Act. 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. Right now, the Senate is voting on the third of three amendments offered by Republicans to address the religious liberty issues that arise from this Disrespect for Marriage Act. And then there will be a vote on the actual bill itself. Now, what's very interesting about this is that all three of these amendments, right now it's a Rubio amendment, prior to this was Lankford amendment, and then there was the Mike Lee amendment. Republicans voted for the amendments, but not the Democrats. Not a single Democrat voted for that I'm aware of. Now, I could be mistaken, but as I was watching, having to come into the studio, I was watching pretty much to the end of the Lankford amendment, and not a single Democrat voted. It's amazing how the Democrats stick together to advance their agenda, but the Republicans, 12 Republicans, breaking off to join the Democrats in this attack on religious freedom. Now, it's been 7 years since the Supreme Court's decision to redefine marriage, and we've already seen the damage inflicted by this decision. Look, what's happening in classrooms where children are being indoctrinated with this radical sexual ideology, you cannot sever that from this redefinition of marriage and human sexuality. Look, I cannot be more clear. The Disrespect for Marriage Act, which codifies the Supreme Court decision into federal law, is an absolute danger to our most fundamental freedoms as Americans, the ability to live out our faith in our public lives, and that includes parents being able to teach their children values that are consistent with biblical truth. I've had multiple conversations with senators and others on the Hill, and I could not be more, let me choose my words carefully here. I cannot believe that we have leaders that do not understand the threat that this poses to religious freedom in this country. I am extremely disappointed in some of these men and women who are advancing this attack. Well, there are some who get it and understand it and have been fighting it. And one of those is joining me now, Congressman Jody Heiss. He serves on the House Committee on Oversight and Reform, the House Committee on Natural Resources. He represents Georgia's 10th Congressional District. Congressman Heiss, welcome back to the program.
Tony, thanks for having me. Literally just getting off a plane and catching up on the latest on this Disrespect Act. It is absolutely horrifying what we're watching right now.
I mean, you see it. You see the threat. I mean, this is not theoretical. We've seen this over the last 7 years. Why is it that we have some leaders, you know, on Capitol Hill that just do not connect the dots?
It is stunning to me to try to connect those dots. And I absolutely cannot fathom. I cannot understand what is going through the minds of these individuals who think that it's okay to shred our First Amendment, our constitutionally protected religious liberties, and open the floodgate. I mean, realistically, Tony, this could be the beginning of the end of religious liberties in America. And unfortunately, it is happening on the shoulders of Republicans who are allowing this to take place. And as you mentioned, they, in fact, will vote for the final passage of this horrendous bill. It is unthinkable to me. And in my opinion, none of these individuals should continue serving in the Senate.
Well, they certainly shouldn't serve with our support. And I can tell you right now that anyone who supports this measure, knowing now what they know, that this is an attack on religious freedom, they will not enjoy the support of the Family Research Council action, our action arm, nor myself in the days, years ahead. That said, Congressman Heiss, this goes back over to the House, where in August, or in June, actually, there were 47 Republicans who voted for this. Now, some of them have since retreated from that, understanding the threat that this poses. But the House is going to have another shot at this. What happens next time?
Yeah, you know, I think the obviously, as you mentioned, the Democrats stick together. So I fully anticipate the entire Democratic conference will stick together and support this. And therefore, it only will take a handful of Republicans to support it, and it will pass the House. I don't look for anywhere near 47 Republicans to support it this time, but more than likely there will be enough to join forces with the Democrats to see this pass in the House of Representatives as well. And yeah, you're exactly right. Many of those who voted before didn't fully grasp the horrific measures that are in this bill, and they understand it now. So again, there won't be 47 Republicans support it, but I just knowing what I know, the makeup of our Republican conference, I would anticipate there's going to be enough to pass this.
Jody, let me ask you this, because you've been at this for a while, as I have. And, you know, this is discouraging to a lot of people who have supported men and women for office who only end up being disappointed when they do offer support for measures like this. I mean, you've made this very clear before. We've talked about this is a spiritual crisis. We're facing spiritual problems that cannot be solved by legislation. The days are difficult, and they're going to get more difficult ahead. How should we as Christians be responding?
Listen, that's a great question, Tony, and something that you're exactly right. I mean, this is so right down my burden and my heart's cry. We cannot fix the problems that America is facing with another piece of legislation or throwing another $1 trillion at it. It is spiritual in nature, which requires the body of Christ stand up and engage our culture and our political structure head to head, eye to eye. And that begins in prayer. It continues at the ballot box. It continues with many actually stepping up to the plate to run for office, be it locally, federally, or statewide, whatever it may be. It involves phone calls, letter writing, rallies. It takes being engaged. And by definition, it is impossible to be salt and light without being engaged. And yet we are called to be salt and light. And so this is the hour for the body of Christ to have her finest hour to step up to the plate and be counted.
Yeah, it's not time to hang it up and go home. It is time to stay faithful to our call to be salt and light. Jody Heiss, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be with you.
And folks, speaking of that, tonight, a special broadcast of Pray, Vote, Stand at 8:30 Eastern Time, a little later than normal as we track the events in the Senate. 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Pray, Vote, Stand. Tune in for that. All right, stick around. The latest on the so-called Respect for Marriage Act next.
Mm-hmm.
After the long election season our nation just went through, many Americans are ready to shift their focus to celebrating with their loved ones. But at Family Research Council, we know that this is perhaps the most dangerous time of the year for our shared values, thanks to Congress's lame duck session. Long before the elections, we began preparing for this moment when we knew leftists and squishy Republicans in Congress would use the distraction of the holidays to push through legislation that undermines biblical principles. You have helped us accomplish so much in 2022, and through your timely gift, you can help us prepare to counter the left's agenda and seize opportunities in front of us in 2023. Join FRC by texting GIVE to 67742, and your gift will have double the impact thanks to a generous challenge match. This holiday season, we must remain vigilant. Partner with FRC by texting GIVE to 67742 so we can continue advancing biblical values.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us. Capitol switchboard number 202-224-3121. You can still contact your senators. They are in... still wrapping up, still voting on the third of the three Republican amendments, the Rubio amendment. Now, as I mentioned earlier, there was an amendment by Mike Lee, which had a 60-vote threshold because it was ruled non-germane to the actual bill, so it had to have 60 votes to progress. It did get one Democrat vote in support. That was Senator Manchin. The other two, the Lankford Amendment and the Rubio Amendment, were a simple majority, 51. Of course, no Democrats would risk voting for Lankford or Rubio's because it could pass. Now, we'll see. Rubio's is still open. They're still voting on that. But it was the Lee Amendment that really addressed all of the religious liberty concerns in this. So here's a real question for you. Maybe not for you. It's rhetorical for you. That is, those Republicans, all of them, who supported this, supported these three amendments, acknowledging that there's a deficiency in the underlying bill when it comes to the protection of religious freedom. So they all acknowledge that by voting for these amendments, the Lankford Amendment, the Lee Amendment, and the Rubio Amendment. And again, I'm assuming on Rubio because it's still being voted on. But then if any of these 12 turn around and vote for the underlying bill without these fixes on it, what is that saying? Well, joining me now to give us the latest on this and next steps is Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. What is the latest from the bill?
As you noted, they're currently voting on the amendments, Senator Rubio's amendments being voted on. We're going to get a vote on the final bill, which is per the agreement struck as part of this process, a final vote requiring 60 votes to pass, which normally is required for cloture, but we're going to see a final passage vote requiring 60 right after these amendments are finished being voted, the votes finished on the amendments. At that point, the bill will have passed or not passed the Senate, make its way to the House. As you note, the senators who are engaged in this process, Tony, cannot hide behind a failed amendment vote to claim they've protected religious liberty by voting for these amendments that are failing, and then turn around and vote for that bill, which does not have sufficient religious liberty protections, because all three of these amendments would increase the religious liberty protections found in the bill currently, which are deficient protections. And yet, I expect, sadly, this process to play out along those lines. But at this point, we need to call senators to notice, to their attention to the fact that they can't support the final bill while at the same time voting for these amendments as they've done. We're currently voting on the amendments now, and after that, there'll be a vote on the final bill.
Now, do you find it interesting, Travis, that I go back to when there was discussion of eliminating the legislative filibuster because the president wasn't able to get some of his economic giveaway plans through the Senate. But you had two Democratic senators. You had Senator Manchin of West Virginia and Sinema of Arizona who said, no, I can't support that. They broke with the Democratic Party. And, I mean, they were just pummeled. They were treated like lepers. it's interesting that Democrats, they stick together. Rarely do you see them break. And when they do, they pay a tremendous price for that. But here, this bill would not pass. It would not pass. Let me be very, very clear about that. This bill would not pass if it were not for 12 Republicans who have supported it thus far, and we are assuming will support it on its final passage.
Yeah, absolutely. And they understand, let's just be clear, there's been no lack of communication about the religious liberty problems with the bill. Senator Lee was very clear in articulating those issues to his colleagues when he circulated a letter outlining why his amendment was necessary to the bill. So every senator is on notice about the deficiencies of the current text. So they can't really say, I didn't know. What they have to say is, I don't believe you. I think the current text protects religious liberty. And there's a lot of flawed arguments flying around right now about how it protects religious liberty, supposedly. Tony, I think it's a sober moment because I think we're standing at the edge of a decision point in which many, maybe including these senators who are supporting this, will look back years from now and say, what did I do with my support for this bill, which is unleashing havoc across the faith, on the faith community across America? It's going to set in motion a series of events that will aim towards the marginalization of Christians from society because of their beliefs about marriage, because these are the contested issues of today, and Christians cannot do anything but stand on them. And yet we're seeing Republicans side with Democrats in marginalizing these believers. This is a sad moment, but we must do everything we can to call attention to what's happening and light the way forward.
The only aspect of that I would disagree with, Travis, is I don't think we'll have to wait years. I think it's a matter of months, and we will see the fruit of this decision. But as you've pointed out, regardless, you know, we have an obligation to speak truth, to stand for truth, to live out that truth. And so our obedience to God is not determined by whether or not we live in a receptive environment. As Christians, we're called to follow Jesus. He says, deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. And Jesus has made very clear what marriage is, what human sexuality is about, and we have to walk in that truth. Travis, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkel, thanking you for being with us. I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.